So in this episode, I'm talking to Saif Ofik, and he's the founder of a startup that's currently in stealth mode. I raised a bunch of money. He previously worked at big tech companies, and he published a really smart list of startups ideas, which is why I reached out to him. But we ended up talking primarily about remote work and the opportunities that arise as part of that. And what's really interesting about that is that Saif is talking about his first-hand experiences, right? Because he's building a remote company right now. So he's directly exposed to all the problems companies like this encounter. And obviously, if you're a believer that remote work is going to be huge or even bigger than it is right now, then this is pure gold, right? Hearing firsthand from someone building a remote company today using the tools and services that are available, and then hearing what kind of problems he encounters, where things could be more efficient. And yeah, if you're looking for business ideas, startup ideas, this is exactly what you need. You have a big trend, remote work, and someone explaining his pain points, really firsthand experiences. And these are all not like dreamed up solutions, but rather, yeah, stuff that real companies would pay real money for because it's what they use to run their operations, right? Though I think the ideas and observations he shared are really great. Enjoy the episode.
Maybe we can just start with your background. And I saw that you worked at Facebook, right?
Yeah, I worked in some of those big tech companies in the US. Facebook is one of them. The second one was Amazon in AWS. Yeah, I think as I started my way in like small companies and startups, and always when you start a small startup, you always imagine the end goal. And the end goal is all those big tech companies. And I figure out, instead of finding the hard way how to build one, I should join one and see the best practices, the processes, and how big companies are run. So at least I'll have those playbooks when I want to create my own company one day.
Yeah, makes sense. And do you think you found them?
Well, I think in those type of companies, every company has really distinct culture. There is no right or wrong. It's the right culture for this specific company. I definitely picked good things from each one. And I think even more importantly, I picked what I don't want to do or with the things that I don't like to have in my company. So sometimes you figure out by the right way, but I think it's better to figure out by the wrong way.
Yeah, absolutely. And what was actually a role? Software engineering leadership is what you have on your website. And what's your role actually?
Yeah, so in Facebook, I was engineering manager. I was managing the teams of engineers responsible for, back in the days, it was Facebook Stories. It's still Facebook Stories, but when we started, it was just competing head-to-head with Snapchat. And when I left, it was by far the biggest stories platform in the world. That's pretty much supporting, managing a group of really talented engineers. It was very similar in AWS. The focus was around SDKs. So if you ever worked with AWS before, you probably used one of our SDKs. So build and maintain those SDKs is a really hard job. And we had amazing group of people who make sure that our SDKs are up to date with best practices and shipped every day. Yeah, that's what I did there.
I have. Yeah, cool. That sounds fun. But now I saw, and this is also why I reached out, you decided it's time to leave. It's time to get back into the arena and you're ready for your own thing. And when did you decide that it's time for this change?
Yeah, so usually I like to say when you start a new journey, you're either running from something or you're running towards something. I think in my case, it was both. And when it was decided for me. Sometimes you have those unexpected life events. And it sounds cliche, right? Like that you have like something tragic that happened and you realize how precious life is. And it's very common to hear stories about people who got into car accident and stayed alive and then changed their career to be whatever, farmers or growing cheese somewhere or whatever. So I think it was a rock moment for me as well, because when you work on those fan companies or big tech startups, they are very well oiled machine that make sure that you keep in this kind of golden cage and all the structure and everything is built to keep you in the rat race, right? How you get your promotion, how you get to the next level. Now your title is not a manager, it's a senior manager, and then you'll be a director and wow, it's amazing. You get some wow bucks in your bank and that's pretty much it. And there's a lot of research that says that after people get to some level of income, increasing income will not increase their happiness. Obviously, when you're super poor and you need to beg for money every day, that's not the case. But when you get to some standard, and I think in the US, it was around 100, 150,000 a year, increasing your salary will not increase your happiness. And I can see it personally, right? If I make now twice than what I made like a few years ago, I'm not necessarily twice happy. If you make five times your salary, you're not going to be five times happier. So then there is a question of what you're optimizing for, what you optimize in your life. And I think it's really hard to ask those questions when you are in the rat race, because all you're focusing on is finding this cheese and get your promotion and get to the next level. And only those like big major life events or tragic or accidents that happens force you to pause for a second and ask yourself, hey, is this the direction I want to go? Is this that's something I want to do with my life? Like, all right, I'll get this cheese. Then what? Like, then I'll chase another cheese. So luckily, but not really luckily, I had one of those moments and I just decided to pause for a few months and kind of reflected on my life and where I want to go and what I want to do. And then I realized that corporate America is not for me. This is not where I want to stay. It's very convenient and easy, but there are other goals that I had in mind. And it's funny, like I always go back to when you ask kids what they want to do, nobody will say, I want to be an executive in a corporation. Like, it's not something we want to do. It's not a passion. It's something we kind of dragged into with life and pay bills and stuff. So I don't want to be there. And I'm lucky enough that I don't have to be there. So that's why I decided to follow my passion and start a company again.
Yeah, makes perfect sense. Are you familiar? Do you know Daniel Rosalo? Because what you just described reminds me a lot of his stuff. He wrote this one post that went super viral titled Only Intrinsic Motivation Lasts. And he also worked at AWS and talked about like the golden handcuffs and how it doesn't make a difference. And then made a similar leap to yours. So
exactly. I don't know if it will like succeed or not. I hope it will. The good part is that it's really up to me, right? There are no like external factors. When you work in a company, it's like company philosophy and like you're one in like hundreds or thousands of people. But when you start your own company, you're the one who dictate your kind of journey, if it's going to make it or not. So I decided to bet on myself.
Yeah, makes perfect sense. Do you know in the post I talked about?
No, I'll be happy if you can share it with me
later. Yeah, I will. It's really funny because of your similar background and like the story is so similar. That's really cool. And though, where are you in your new journey? I think you just started, right?
Yeah, so I just started. I already closed my seed round, which was amazingly fast. And I'm saying amazingly fast because I remember as an entrepreneur 10 years ago, starting my first company, I was knocking on doors and begging for, I don't know, check of like 10,000K. Nobody wanted to invest back then. Maybe it's because of my resume, maybe because of market conditions, but the seed round was really oversubscribed and we closed it in like less than a week. So in terms of funding, everything is good. Now is the real job, right? Now is the execution, hiring and building the product. The product itself is still in stealth mode, but all I can say for now, it's a developer tools company that takes care of all the client libraries needs. And we're hiring. If anyone wants to join an early stage company that is remote first, I'll be happy to chat.
Cool. And are you focusing on any specific industry? Because I know you're into Web3, crypto and stuff, or is it unrelated?
Yeah, it's funny though. When I was kind of in the ideation phase, one of the ideas that I had, and maybe we can talk about it later, was crypto. I evaluated a lot of ideas in crypto space. Unfortunately, I live in the US right now. And I think while US is great for entrepreneurs and innovation, Silicon Valley obviously changed the world. When it comes to crypto, US is the worst place you want to be, simply because of over-regulations, red tape, and kind of fear-based environment. And I realized that I want to sleep well at night. I don't want anyone from the FTC to knock on my door one night and say, hey, what you're doing is not legal or something like that. So I just decided not to deal with crypto for now. I do think that crypto is an amazing opportunity for people outside of the US. Or if you want to build something that is not kind of in borderline securities, because once you get into FCC regulation and stuff, you're just going to kill yourself with so much over red tape and regulation. So as a US resident, I don't think it's a place for me to start a crypto company, unfortunately.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And here in Europe, we have similar problems, right? Europe is also famous for regulations and stuff. If you're living anywhere else, agree.
Yeah, it's funny. And I think like the all the innovation and move fast, break things, all the things that kind of got the US and maybe Europe back in the days to where they are is kind of come back to haunt us now, right? Even regulations, right? Yes, we have Coinbase and maybe two or three companies that offer this amazing kind of products to people, but like how many of startups are not even started because they're afraid of regulations? And when you have environment that shut off innovation, that's when you need to start worried. So yeah, so in my early ideation phase, I researched some crypto ideas. I'm a huge crypto fan, not because of kind of speculations and, oh yeah, Bitcoin is now 40,000. I made so much money. I less care about those things. I just did the the idea of owning your money and not be relying on other third-party services. And in general, my philosophy is to always cut the middleman, especially when it comes to money. That's something that I'm really passionate about and I want to contribute to. So I'm a huge crypto fan, but unfortunately only from the side.
The sidelines, yeah, maybe. But maybe you can share some of the ideas you brainstorm and could be a better fit for someone outside, but maybe later we can talk because you have also this idea, whole list of ideas, which is one of the reasons why I reached out. But maybe just one quick question about your company first, how we went about the fundraiser, because 1 week sounds amazingly fast. What did you do, if you could share anything?
Yeah, and I think that's the key here. It's even though it took a week to close the fundraise, it's actually took me 10 years to build those relationships. So when I was working on those companies or when I worked in my previous startups, I always maintained relationship with great investors and people I trust. And some of them were always pushing me to leave my job, my daytime job, and start a company. So I think when the time came, it was really easy to kind of reach back to all the connections that I made over the years and say, hey, remember we talked about starting a company? Now it's the time. And for them, it was a no-brainer to invest. So even though you hear all those stories, like what I just told you, that I closed the seed round in a week, it's not really the case. I'm actually lying. It took me 10 years to build and maintain those relationships. And when the time comes, then you can actually use it for your benefits.
Yeah, that's amazing. And makes a lot of sense. How big is your team now?
So the team right now, literally just me. I'm just getting started. I'm hiring the first 10 engineers for the company. I have a huge pipeline of people I'm interviewing right now. And I actually wrote a blog post about that, of how you interview people. And maybe it can be a good kind of segue to talk about some ideas. The way I think about it right now, and again, I for a context, I used to interview people for both Facebook and Amazon engineers, from product managers and TPMs and all those roles. And one of the things that I realized is that I felt disgusted by doing the interview pipeline that in those companies, because in a way you interview for not for a skill set, you interview for how they actually prepared for the interview, which is metadata. You don't really care about if they're good engineers or not. You care about how much they actually prepared for the interview day. And I think those type of companies really takes it to the extreme. I actually wrote a blog post about it. And I compare it to, imagine you go to you want to be a singer. You love to sing. And then you go to American Idol, which the best opportunity for you to kind of to be discovered. And the requirement for American Idol is not how well you can sing, is for instance, how fast you can sing, or how many languages you can sing at, or can you sing underwater? Can you sing without breathing for more than 60 seconds? Like, yes, it's a test, but is it the real test you want to evaluate people by? And in a way, like coding is the same, right? You don't like in those companies, and you don't really evaluate how they actually code. You evaluate how fast that they can write an algorithm on the whiteboard, or how good they can memorize some solution for some algorithm lead code problem. And there is really no correlation between how people can do this specific task in an interview to how they code in real life. So the approach that I'm taking with LibLab, by the way, LibLab is the company I'm starting, is very practical, which is take home tasks should not take you more than 3 hours. I don't want you to spend all your day with us. If it's not a great fit, you'll know right away. If it is, we can move to the next steps, but it will be really as similar as possible to real world experience.
Yeah, that's really cool. And it's the same way at universities and stuff, but at companies it's even worse, that what you're testing has no connection to what people are actually doing then.
Yeah, it's very little. Exactly. It's more like social signaling. It's, who is the company that is the hardest to get into? Like, why is this even important? I don't care that I interviewed hundreds of thousands of people for this one role. I care that whoever I got accepted is really good fit for this role. And there's a lot of marketing and social signaling going on between those companies, which kind of push them to push the boundaries of how hard the interview process can be. But I think who suffer from it is at the end of the day is us, the engineers, who now needs to study for things that are not really relevant for our job.
Yeah, it's just a waste of time. And you probably also lose a lot of very talented people who are just not interested in like spending exactly. hours on silly problems.
Exactly. So in those type of companies, they are really concerned about, I'll say, false negatives, false positive, meaning they hire the wrong people for the job. But I'm actually more worried about false negative, like missing out on great talents, right? Because if you hire the wrong person to the job, you can always fire them. Like you'll figure out really fast. What you can figure out is if you missed out on a great candidate who can be a perfect fit for whatever you're looking for. And I will optimize for that versus the false positives.
That's awesome. Yeah. So let's dive in. Let's talk about ideas. And did you prepare also a list for this year, or is it still the last year's idea? Because you published a blog post called Startup Ideas for 2021. And obviously the year went by fast and it's already 2022. Yeah.
Yeah, so it's funny, but first of all, thanks for reading that. I don't know how many people read it that listen, but according to Google Analytics, not a lot. So at least I have one person who actually read what they wrote. But yeah, I actually do have a list for 2022, which is under one domain, and we can talk about it in a second. But I think just as an anecdote, it's funny to say that the list that I wrote from 2021, I'll say 90% of that is still relevant today. But yeah, if we want to talk about 2022, and I didn't publish it yet, but I actually wrote some notes for myself, I do think there is a lot of opportunities around what happened with COVID. So a lot of people say, yeah, COVID is almost gone, but I think COVID is here to stay in terms of mentality, right? How companies are run by and how it kind of shaped the world. And for me, the best ideas for 2022 is focused around one domain, which is remote work, right? Remote, because everybody now can work from home and a lot of people actually choose to do that versus going back to an office. That's actually opens the door to a lot of opportunities around the world of remote work and remote corporations. And if you want, we can talk on some of those opportunities I can think of.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Awesome. So when you think about remote, you can go to a lot of different segments, right? You can anything from kind of transportations to home building, right? Like for instance, we just moved to a new home. And for me, one of the most important things is to find a home within a home office, because I knew I'm not going to commute to work every day. And it's important to have a quiet environment with a home office. So you can go to so many different directions, anything from how much you actually need your car now, because it's sitting in my garage most of the day, all the way to how you build new houses with kind of home office or maybe two home office, if you have a couple that each one needs their own environment. But I think that the thing that I want to focus on this conversation will be around building and maintaining companies around the culture of remote work. And the reason why I'm saying that is because this is what I'm doing right now with LibLab. One of the first kind of decisions that I made is that I want to make this company remote first. And what came with that is a lot of challenges that are still unsolved. And maybe I'll talk about it as kind of a journey of someone who started a company and then moving to maintaining the company, executing the company. And then from the employee's perspective, how they want to have their day-to-day running remote first company. So the first challenge that I kind of face, and I think many people like me face, is like discovery, right? Like now how you find the best talent, right? So back in the days, or still in some companies today, you only discover talent that are like 20, 30 mile radius around your physical location. But now my radius is everywhere in the globe. So how can I find the best talent? And yes, you do have like companies that offer best talent or claim to be the best talent. But sometimes, or most of the times, you rely on third-party services to tell you who is the best talent or who they think is the best talent. But is there like a global rank that I can use? Because I want to believe that if I go to interview with one company and they solve an algorithm problem, which is very hard, I want to port it to another company and say, hey, remember this really hard algorithm problem? I already did it. So let's not repeat ourselves. Or remember this like hard system design, like design Twitter, like I already did it like five times. Let's not repeat it. So if there is a global rank or a global judge, I want to say, that can actually evaluate those type of solutions. And the nice thing about those solutions or those challenges, at least for engineers, it's binary. Yes or no. There is no like maybe. Write in program that does something. You can actually judge if the program actually does that same thing. And you can judge how fast it produces in terms of the efficiency. So those type of things can be solved. It's really hard to port it from one company into company. And most of companies will not even look at how you performed in other companies' interviews because they want to believe that their interview process is the best. But the reality is that they all ask the same questions. So I think that's an opportunity I can think of around how you can aggregate, maintain, and bubble up the best talent globally. So people like me can say, hey, give me the best talent, the best, I don't know, backend engineer who knows JavaScript and Node and Python, who want to work in a remote company up to this amount of salary, and just be able to see their past performances in interviews and how are they going to fit in terms of, at least in terms of skills. Then you can evaluate their kind of culture and see if it's relevant to your company or not. But I think discovery and bubbling up the best talent will be a great challenge for companies to solve.
Oh yeah, that's definitely a cool idea. I'm just trying to understand how it would work. Are you thinking that you have a company which provides like a set of benchmark projects and then coders can just do them and they get badges or whatever, can get a global rank that way? Or would it work differently?
Yeah, in an ideal world, it will be a global ranking system. Whatever the ranking system is, take the best companies in the world, the best evaluator in the world, say, hey, those are the type of questions that we want to evaluate candidates by. And then have people go through this online assessment or this kind of online interview, get a rank. And based on this rank, they can publish the rank globally and say, hey, this is my current rank. This is my current level. And then this is how much I want to get paid. And just try to match them with companies who want to look for like people who are experts in whatever domain.
Gotcha. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. So people wouldn't have to do it themselves all the time, especially smaller companies don't have like the resources to do this, and they can just rely on this outsourced.
Yeah, exactly. Small companies don't even know how to ask the right questions, especially if you go to small startups who don't have a lot of experience with interviewing. They don't know how to evaluate candidates the right way. In a good scenario, they research and find out. In a bad scenario, they just try to mimic whatever other companies are doing, and it might not work well. So this is one segment, just starting with the talent discovery. I think let's step to the next step, which is, all right, let's say you found the talent who want to work for your company. How much this person should get paid? And now there are two schools of thoughts here, right? One school of thought is everybody should get paid equally no matter where they live, which is okay. I'm not saying if it's better or not, right? This is one school of thought. So I think what I hear more, especially in all those fan companies, is that they will adjust your kind of salary and compensation to the cost of living will actually directly affect how much you're going to get paid. So for the same job, for the same role, for the same experience, someone in India will earn less than someone in San Francisco, for instance. Good or bad, I don't know. I'm not here to judge, but that's the current situation that most company faces. So I think there is a better need for tooling around compensation based on location, because I don't know how much engineer in Netherlands earns. I don't know how much engineer in different cities in Netherlands will earn, right? So what most companies do, they just resource whatever cost of living in specific area. They maybe Google average salary in Nigeria, right? And that's pretty much it. But I don't think it's professional enough, and I don't think it's actually fair for the actual candidate.
Enough, yeah.
So I would love to have an API or a service that I can say, hey, like, just this is my current candidate. This is the level of experience. This is their city in this country. Tell me how much is the median, how much is the top 90%, how much is whatever. And based on that, make an offer. So especially nowadays that people are moving a lot from place to place and even from country to country, I want to be able to adjust my salary based on where they live. So if someone decides to move from San Francisco to Oklahoma City, I want to be able to adjust their salary right away. And if the next day they decide to move from Oklahoma City to Mexico City, I want to adjust the salary as well. Again, if I choose to adjust the salary based on location. So I think there is a huge opportunity to aggregate data across locations, across cities, across different roles, and offer it as a service to other companies.
There are websites, right? Nomadlist and Numbeo, and they have this cost of living index and stuff. But what you're saying is this is not really scientific enough.
It's not scientific enough, but I'm not just talking about the cost of living. I'm talking about the average salary in this local market. Because in the other day, I'm competing with the local market where candidates are. So how much software engineer in San Francisco make versus how much software engineer in Mexico City makes, I don't know. Like, I can research. There is not like right place to research, especially if you hire global talent in 50 cities at the same time and they all move into other cities at the same time. Like, to manage this logistics will be very hard.
Yeah. I'm just trying to think how to get this data. And there is levels.fyi, I think, which is this crowdsourced.
Yeah, but level.fyi is relevant usually for the US.
I'm just trying to think if you could do something similar on a global scale.
Oh, right? Exactly. So you can go to the academic approach and actually research cost of living. I think there is the Big Mac index, right? Like how expensive Big Mac across different countries. But I'm not even talking about countries. I'm talking about specific cities in countries because there's a huge difference between expensive city to a not expensive city in the same country. So you can take the academic approach and research average salaries, survey data and things like that. Or you can, like you said, you can crowdsource it and say, hey, tell me what city you live in, how much you make, what your level, and kind of make another level.fyi index. So however you're going to solve it, I think whoever going to solve it going to make a lot of money because there are lots of companies, not just big corporations, even startups that would love to pay for this type of service because I don't know how much I should offer engineering in different cities in the world.
Yeah, and the beauty of it would be that it would be like the central source of truth or authority. So there would be no negotiation, is this fair or whatever? No, like this website or this authority that this is fair and now it is fair. And,
yeah, exactly. You have source of truth. You want to offer 10th percentile, that's fine. It's up to you to decide where you want to place them in the scale. You want to offer mid-market rates, you want to offer low market rates. It's up to you, but at least you have some data to tell you how much, what's the range for a specific position.
Yeah, I like that. That makes a lot of sense. It actually wouldn't be too hard, I think, if you're the right kind of person, right? And the right kind of person could be either like a scientist, obviously, or someone with a sociology background or whatever, who knows how to do it in a scientific way, or someone who just knows how to drum up enough attention to get like this crowdsourced data set. And you can really start from there. I think that...
Yeah, exactly. And obviously, I'm talking about engineers, but it applies to any role. So it's really hard to accomplish it to whatever. Support technician, online support technician for a specific field. So just take it to any other role and just create a global index. So next step is, all right, let's say you did find how to pay them and what will be the market rate for them based on whatever your philosophy is. Now, the next question is how you will actually structure the payment. And there are like a lot of companies that got really famous in the past year that does global payments, companies like Deel and Pilot and Papaya takes care of all the payroll across borders, across locations. So I think this is almost solved. I think what is still not solved is placing or combining everything together because you don't just want to pay them money. You want to give them equity in the company. So how you do that, like even legally, right? How you structure contracts with, hey, you get this stock in an entity that is not even in your country. How you do that legally, how you make a compensation package. What about benefits, right? Benefits in the US are different than benefits in Israel, right? The cost of benefits is completely different. Benefits in France will be different than healthcare in France will be different in healthcare in Mexico. So how can I have one compensation package that is relevant to wherever people are? Because let's say I want to pay for all your medical expenses, no matter what's the country, it will be like 5 times as expensive in the US than in Israel, for instance. So there is a need for a better HR or compensation package software that package together equity and benefits and perks, right? Like how much vacation days I should give people? What is the minimum or maximum that I'm required? I guess there is no maximum, but what is the minimum that I'm required to give in specific country? I mean, how can I level the play field for all the employees? Because in an ideal world, I want my employees to have the same benefits no matter where they live. I want them to have access to healthcare no matter if they live in the US or in one of those third world countries. And so I think this is a much bigger problem to solve, but even start with just shipping swag to employees, right? When they in their first day, they need to have a nice laptop with some t-shirts and like all those like swags. How I do that logistically? Do I go now to UPS and start shipping things to like all over the world? I would love to have one company that does it as a service for me in their first day. This is the perks they get. This is the laptop. It's already installed. It's already ready and shipped to them. So I'll say logistics around compensation and perks. That's another opportunity that I can see.
Yeah, the swag idea is definitely simpler, but you could probably start even simpler with just information. This could, again, be a perfect place to start. And then on top of that, you could really do more service stuff and whatever. But yeah, like just gathering all the relevant information that you just mentioned about how many holidays and what's the situation with healthcare and what are good perks for someone living there. maybe he's living in a place where there are no co-working spaces, so like giving him allowance for co-working makes zero sense, but maybe you could offer something else, and you need to figure out these things. And you can't just offer the same package to everyone, because it simply makes no sense. And yes, certain things make no sense in a culture, and you should give them something else. And just having this information would be, I think, a good place to start. And then, of course, if you can take out steps, that's even better.
Yeah, exactly. So again, you can go as deep or as wide as you want in this kind of field, but you can start with just aggregating data, right? How much vacation days in each country, and go all the way to shipping and logistics, right? Like creating a one API that already ship people in their first day, whatever they need to get started. And okay, so next step, let's say first day has arrived and the employees are getting started to work. How do I manage their gear? Like I know there are some softwares that do that, but like an average employee will sign for, I don't know, 20 different services of your company. Anything from payroll provider to Spotify account to Zoom account to whatever, Google G Suite to Microsoft Office account. They will probably have 20 different accounts in different providers that you need to pay every month for subscription-based. How you manage that for employee? If the employee leaves tomorrow morning, how you do that? Now you need to manually go to all those services and start to remove this employee and pay, so you won't pay for a kind of extra person. Or the same goes when they join. Are you going to 20 different services and add them to those services? There is a need to like one integration point that you can say, hey, I have Jacob who joined our company today. And in one click, he automatically joins to all those different services. I'll say automation around SaaS companies and all the way to when the employee leaves, I want to make sure I can wipe their laptop from remote. I want to make sure that they can ship their gear back, whatever laptop or headsets or desk or whatever you bought to those employees. So there is anything from the software perspective all the way to logistics and shipping of the gear across the world. That's another problem that companies can solve.
Yeah, I totally agree that this is a problem, but it seems hard to solve. And I'm not quite sure how you would do that technically.
Yeah. So by the way, hard to solve is it's a moat. I'm not giving you easy problem, but those type of hard problems, if you solve it, you will stick, right? You will not probably have a lot of competitors. So yes. I'll say for the software perspective, just think about Zapier, right? So Zapier for SaaS companies. How can I like in one click integrate with Google G Suite and Microsoft Office and whatever like other like services I'm using, Airtable or whatever, and in one click I can add employee or remove employee. It can be automated easily, right? All the way to whatever Plaid is doing that goes to banks and scrap their information behind the scenes. You can do that as manual as that, or you can find a way to integrate with their APIs, but you can actually automate it as a software and just give companies an interface saying, hey, remove employee, remove permission, add permission. That's it. And then they do all the logistics for you behind the scenes. So that's, I think that's the easy part. I think the harder part will be around logistics again, but you can partner with local UPS or post office, whatever services in each country, and make sure that you have some interface to ship items globally or ask for shipping back items globally.
Yeah, that makes sense. Thinking in terms of service like Zapier makes sense. And you're right. You would have like technical risk, but no market risk. If you can pull it off, this is obviously a no-brainer.
Exactly. It's a no-brainer. As I can tell you, as a startup founder, I don't want to waste time manually adding people to 20 different services, especially as I add more and more services over the years. So I want to have one Zapier integration point saying, hey, this is where employee joined, this is where employee lives, and that's pretty much it. That will take care of all the rest.
Yeah, perfect. What's next?
Right, I can keep going. The first day has arrived, we signed this employee to all those 20 different services, great. Now let's talk about culture, right? The culture of, I want to say, remote first companies, which kind of I think we're in between state. We are not really remote first companies nowadays. We're trying to be, but we're not. We're still relying in kind of meetings and face-to-face communication. And kind of, I can tell you that when I'm hiring employees, I ask them to be in the same time zone as the US, meaning they can work from Thailand, I don't care, but they need to work in the US time zone, which means that for them, it's going to be like working at 2, 3 a.m. at night, right? which is not ideal for employees. So I think what I'm trying to think of is, how can I have people in Thailand working with the people in the US and still feeling comfortable that none of them should compromise on the working hours? And I think this is where I categorize a bigger opportunity, which is still very vague. I don't have a solution. I just have the problem, which is what I call async first companies, right? How can I structure my company to be as asynchronous as possible without relying on face-to-face communication, with minimizing the amount of meetings and at least face-to-face real-time meetings, and move to as much async as possible? And I can tell you that one of the first signals they got is when I actually joined Amazon. So one of the things that Amazon is really well known for is their writing culture. We start every meeting with just reading a one pager or a six pager and just commenting on whatever is written there, which I think it's a great async communication option, because if that's the case, we don't actually need to physically be at the same time in the same room. I can read it in my morning, you can read it in your morning, but all the comments will be on the doc and we can discuss it asynchronously. So can I take it to the extreme? Can I take it to a place that I can say, hey, I have a company that we never have meetings. Everything is done asynchronously as possible, which means people can work whenever they're comfortable to work in their own free time, or not free time, in their own time, no matter what the time zone is. Now, here it's also a challenge, because then how you build trust, how you build relationships, how you make sure people actually enjoy working and not just talking to a document all day. I wish I had more solutions here, but I think what they have mostly is problems, which is a good start. But once you understand the problem and the mindset that remote first companies face, then you need to ask yourself what better toolings we can create. I think a lot of people said that we couldn't have or pass COVID the way we passed unless we had this tool actually helped us keep working the way we always work, just from home. So what can be the next version of Zoom? And I don't think I buy the metaverse version. It's a good kind of gimmick, but I don't think that this is where people want to spend their life. I might be wrong, by the way, but what would be the next Zoom for async first companies? What processes or tools we can give them that will make meetings unnecessary?
Yeah, I really like that. And it's obvious that currently the situation is that everyone just tries to clone what has already been done just into this new world. And yeah, it's just a matter of time until it gets replaced by a solution that is native to this new reality, if you want to call it that.
Exactly. Because Zoom is putting a lipstick on a pig, right? We mimic whatever we do. Instead of doing it like sitting next to each other, we're sitting next to a computer. But I think it's like getting us halfway there. It's not all the way there. So we're still, like you and I, Jacob, still need to work to talk right now at the same time to record this podcast. And in companies, they all need to meet together like 10, whatever, five people at the same time to discussions, show meetings. So how can I kill meetings? How can I make sure that meetings are not relevant? How can I make sure that people are still productive, but not relying on those type of tools? And even when you look at whatever the metaverse version for Microsoft or for Meta, it's still around avatar sittings around the table, right? It's taking meetings the way we know them, just putting it in the metaverse. And I think that's not what the metaverse will make, because then we just mimic whatever we're doing in real life. And we don't want that, because for that we have real life. So how can we make it absolute? How can we take the table out of the equation and make sure that people don't need to communicate face-to-face at the same time to accomplish some goal?
Yeah, it's probably obvious that if you could redesign how everything works from scratch, you rarely end up with a solution that we have, right? It's the same with schools. If you take like the best education researchers and ask them what's the best way to educate children, you would never end up with the kind of schools we have. And it's the same with work. You have to sit at one desk and do all the work there. Makes zero sense, right? Because you have these different modes of working. And I don't know about you, but it seems at least a few people see it similar to me, that I do different work in different places, and just because it works better. And for very deeply focused work, I'm at my desk, but if I'm just thinking, writing emails, I'm on the couch actually, or I go to a cafe to write essays and think about stuff. I go to the library, and having these locations, which is actually very helpful. But yeah, this is not how you can work in most companies. And I think something very similar is going on with remote work, with remote first working culture. And there are already examples, right, of companies who experiment, who are trying to do something along these lines. I'm just thinking about Gumroad. If you're familiar with them, they actually do this. They have no meetings and are completely remote. And the founder is quite vocal about it. So he's writing about his experiences and how they operate. And I'm pretty sure they are not there yet, but it's a start. And this is how it works. You have a bunch of companies just trying different things, and over time, something will emerge, right?
Yeah, exactly. And I think that's what we were forced to do. We're still like being very conservative the way we run companies. We still have meetings. We still have, like, when Stripe hire employees, they hire employees in the US, right? Or in Canada, like the same time zone. But I don't want to have employees at the same time zone. So I want to have teams from all over the world in the same team collaborating together. And it can be software, but it's not necessarily software. It can go all the way to processes and culture of the company. Again, this is one of those things that I don't know what will be the best solution. I don't think that like working on docs all day and writing everything and commenting on each other will be the solution here. But there are definitely tools and processes that we can put in place that make async first companies more productive.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, they're now thinking in terms of actually business ideas, what could you do? How could you take advantage of this opportunity? One very simple thing could be to become just like the expert, right? In this topic, really just study what companies like Gumroad and whatever is doing, and then come up with like best practices. If you're very passionate about this problem, this is what I would do probably. And then you become like the David Allen, the getting things done, but for remote, for remote work. And someone will become the David Allen for remote work. So this is definitely one opportunity. And the second one obviously is, once we have these best practices, you can actually build tools around them. Because, yeah, I totally agree. Zoom is not the end of the story.
Exactly. It's like people wanted to kill email for so long for corporate environment. Eventually, I think they did, right? Like you have Slack and you have all those like Discord and all those competitors. Like now email is unneeded in a way. It's much more frequent, much more easy. Again, with Slack and Discord, you have other problems. You created new set of problems, but at least you were able to kill email if you wanted. And what I'm saying is I want to be the Slack for meetings, whatever it means, right? How can I kill meetings and not rely on the same time zone syncs all the time? And make sure that people are productive and happy and connected to each other. Cool. Which kind of lead me to the next problem. So let's say we kill meetings. We have amazing culture. Everybody can work from wherever they want, whenever they want, and everything gets done. Now the problem is how I make sure that people are getting along with each other, right? How I build a company that people are happy working together. How I create a culture that people are happy and productive and have friends at work. I don't know if people remember, we used to have friends at work. We used to go out to a beer after working hours and actually create meaningful relationships, right? Now, I think if everything is, there is no meeting, there is no face-to-face communication, then the problem is that there are no friendships. There are not like real connection between people. So the next set of problems is how you cultivate culture that people can create meaningful relationships that are not necessarily related to work, but obviously contribute a lot to work, right? Because if now Jacob, you and me are best friends, obviously we will enjoy working together much more and we will be more productive when we work together. This type of problem is, I had it also as a manager when I worked in AWS, when all the teams started working remotely and like when COVID started, right? Okay, how I make sure that new people who join the team feel the same level of connection to people who already know each other for years and used to meet in the office every day. And this is still unsolved, right? So a lot of companies have those like virtual hangouts, I call it, like, oh yeah, let's have a happy hour once a day. It still feels like work. Like people need to show up. Yeah. Exactly. It's an awkward work. Everybody watch each other. You always feel being watched. Even if we're drinking virtually beer or playing a trivia night or whatever it is, I don't know a lot of people.
Same. Yeah.
Exactly. It's definitely not the same. It's awkward and it feels like work. It doesn't feel like a fun evening or a fun activity. So I think that's an entire set of problems of how can I cultivate this culture, how I can make people are actually having fun with each other and creating those relationships. I don't have the answer here yet. Again, I think what we are trying is just to port our real world experience to Zoom meetings. So we all sit with a beer and drink beer together. Great, but it's not the same. Whereas singing karaoke or having a trivia night, virtual trivia night in Zoom, it's still not the same. So yeah, there is a need to be the fun place for events in Zoom or whatever tool will be. And yeah, I'm happy to hear your take on it.
Yeah, I think Zoom is fine, is okay for one-on-ones, but when it's more people, it's always awkward. It's really, like you said, just people staring at each other. And at least for me, the biggest missing puzzle piece is that usually when you have lots of people sitting at a table, you have not just one conversation going on, but you can talk to the people sitting next to you, and these little conversations can start to emerge. And many people don't feel comfortable speaking up if there's a big round. And this would be like the easiest first step, I think, to make it easier to get this kind of experience. And then you could just click on a person and have a very seamless way to talk to just one person. And like the main conversation fades into the background, is only just with little volume. And then you talk to one people, and maybe even all other people can then see that you're talking right now, so they won't interrupt and stuff. Just little things like that. And yeah, maybe just using your cursor to go over your head would start this kind of little conversation, side conversation between us. And at the same time, other people could hear it maybe, but just very low. And they could then try, just like in real life, you can listen in, right? And actively focus on different conversations going on in a room or at a table. And this is completely missing. And I've seen actually tools who try to experiment with spatial audio, getting spatial audio virtually. And this is easy or not so hard, because you have just these little avatars. And then depending on your distance and whatever, you can tune the volume up and down. And this is cute, but not the same. And I think what I just described, and I have no idea if it exists, but it should exist, just to make these big group calls less awkward and allow for side conversations. And I'm pretty sure if you go through a few iterations, you can figure it out. And you now have also Zoom apps. This is where you could probably just with a plugin or whatever. And yeah, I would love to use it.
Yeah, exactly. You don't need to reinvent the wheel. You don't need to reinvent video communication. You just need to build experiences that are comfortable to have in large settings in a way that you actually build relationships. Because yeah, we can all watch a show together, but it's not going to make me more close with my colleague. So how can I, like, in a way, you need to be an expert in kind of organization behavioral, but you also need to be an expert on relationship building, right? And team building. And you need to put everything together in a technical product that will be easy to use and also fun to use at the same time. It's not easy. Obviously, like you said, there are lots of iterations that need to be done there, but I'll just say that the current solutions that we have are not there yet.
Yeah, agreed. We are almost running out of time. So is there a last step maybe you have on your list?
This list is just keep growing every day. So, we can do another 5-hour sessions of that, but maybe I'll just end with that. So we talked about relationship building, and I think what a lot of companies realized, especially companies that are remote first, that there is no replacement to face kind of interaction and face-to-face communication. And the outcome of that is that a lot of companies, my company in LibLab, the same, default to have offsites, right? Like once a year, twice a year, once a quarter, whatever the frequency will be. Everybody gets together in some random location in the world, and we just have a fun of a few days. We have some activities, we have some whatever, yoga sessions and hikes and parties and whatever. And the purpose of that is actually get people together to the same room, to the same physical location. It doesn't have to be every day, but at least once a year, twice a year, whatever the frequency will be. And I think that this is a good opportunity to be the next, whatever, Airbnb or Expedia for offsites. I can tell you as a manager, like the logistics around organizing offsite, it's unbelievably hard. I need to find a hotel. I need to book flights to all the employees. I need to make sure everybody has the right kind of meal, the diet restrictions. I need to make sure that I have a kind of agenda for the day for everyone. I need to make sure it's actually team building event that actually creates some value for everyone. I want to make sure that they have their own free time. I want to make sure there are no travel restrictions. There's so many logistics that involve on just scheduling 3-4 days fun for all the employees. And I would love to have a service like you have Airbnb or whatever, like a concierge service to say, hey, I have a team of 10 people. We want to meet in Thailand. We want to have those dates. Take care of that for me. And that's it, right? They take care of everything from flights to communication to employees, to make sure their passport is correct, to make sure that whatever, we book the right yoga teacher and they come in time, and the Wi-Fi in the facility is good enough. There is a need for that. And again, as more and more companies create those offsites more and more frequent, this market will just get bigger and bigger. So there is a lot of automation you can do that, but I'll say if you ever wanted to open a travel agency, that's your chance, right? Capture the market of remote companies, startups, offsites, and just offer this experience, kind of experience as a service or offsite as a service to companies.
Yes, it's funny because I have actually a friend who's doing just that. Peter Faber is his name, and the company is SurfOffice. SurfOffice.com, exactly what you just described, planning offsite team building experiences for companies. It's exactly that, and I'm sure he would agree. But this is an amazing. Last years were tough, obviously, with COVID and stuff, but now they're getting back at it. And yeah, this is definitely a huge opportunity. And
it's a huge market, and it's a fun market to be in. Like, you're in the fun business. You're making sure people are having fun and meeting together. And so, yeah, there is obviously not a clear winner in this market yet. It's still open to disruption. And Peter or whoever else want to join this kind of company or start their own companies around this topic, it's going to be a big business.
Yeah, absolutely. So thank you so much for taking the time. This was really fun. And maybe, yeah, once you're in a few months or whatever, we can chat again, because I'm pretty sure we'll have an even longer list of new problems you encountered in building your remote first company.
Yeah, Jacob, thanks for reading my blog and reaching out. And it was really a pleasure. And I think the best advice I can say to whoever listened to this podcast is there are so many ideas out there, and it will just keep generating the new ideas. I mean, just go for it. Whatever your idea is, just go for it and start, jump to the pool and start swimming. Even if you'll end up in a different location, at least you're in the pool and you're swimming.
Yeah, and you're like the perfect example of this, because all the ideas you just described came from your own experience, because you actually started moving. You were not just sitting at your desk and trying to come up with ideas, but you also did this. But the ideas we talked about today were really just from your own experiences actually building a business. And these are usually your best ideas, right? Because they are not just coming from nowhere, but actually from firsthand experiences. And if you have this problem, pretty sure lots of other people have it too. So.
Exactly. The best ideas come from real problem. And if you face the problem, you will be perfectly positioned to solve it.
Yeah. Thank you so much.
All right. Thanks, Jack.